Hi, thank you for listening to the Print and Packaging Lab powered by PIA Mid-America. We are a regional trade association serving the printing and packaging industry. Today's episode focuses on continuous improvement and root cause.
So again, my name is Nikki. I work at Hallmark Cards, and I work in product safety at this point in time, but I do have a background in printing and in lean.
Nikki, I'm really excited to be part of this one. It is such a passion of mine to like get to that that root cause, right? Get to the bottom mm-hmm. of it. My husband had a little bit of a backache this morning, and he's like, it's hurting my shoulder, but I think it's in my neck. And
yep.
Looking at that root cause.
That's right. Yeah, that is one of the things that I like about all of this lean stuff is it really does kind of span work and personal, and you know, you're learning all kinds of stuff to make your life better.
Yeah.
So root cause, when we talk about PDCA, root cause is actually like toward the end of plan. So plan, do, check, act. Plan is all the way down through root cause and potential solutions. So the very beginning of plan, we're looking at our business case. We're looking at our, current state is, what our actionable problems are. We've identified our problem or problems within this situation. Point of cause is something that not everybody necessarily knows a lot about or practices. I find once I've figured out what it was and how to do it effectively, and I've taught, I don't know, about a year ago, I taught a session on it to this group. It makes getting to root cause way easier. If you do a really good job of breaking down your problem and doing your point of cause and understanding where that problem is happening, the root cause becomes much, much easier. Again, it's extremely difficult to get down to that level and to actually make that happen, which is sometimes what gets people maybe feeling like they are spinning their wheels a little bit. And maybe, you know, you kind of get to this point, it's like, I really don't know that I can ever get to that root cause or eliminate what that root cause is. But you really have to think about like, what is a symptom versus a cause? And this is really important to understand, because if you're only fixing the symptom of the situation, then you're really not getting to the root cause, and it's just going to continue to come back again and again and again. And so that's where you get into this. People talk about they're in a firefighting mode. It's like they're constantly putting the fires out, and it's the same fire, that type of thing. So understanding and just taking a step back and really thinking about is what I'm thinking of as the problem. Is that really a symptom, or is it really the problem and the root, and you know, the root cause of that problem? So I think a lot of people have at least some experience or some familiarity with five whys. So it's one tactic to get down to your root cause. And basically what that means is you ask why five times, roughly five. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. And then one of the other things that I have found that people really important and have gotten a lot of success with is if you ask that first why and your answer is you have multiple answers to that first why, because that happens a lot, right? You're like, well, why did this happen? Well, because of this and this and this, you know. Mm-hmm. If you have multiple answers to that first why, you have not broken your problem down granular enough. Okay. So you need to step back and go and continue to break that down to its smallest level. The importance of doing five whys correctly is also very important, because what I've experienced in training is sometimes people will ask five like independent questions. So like, why is the sky blue? Why is the grass green? Why is, you know, it's like, The whole purpose of the five whys is to dig down on that original question. So it's like the answer to your first question now becomes the question, right? So why is it like that? So you're constantly drilling down straight down on that. So that's really important, because if you're asking five individual independent questions, it doesn't do you any good.
Can we maybe play a little bit of a hypothetical? Like, why is there a bottleneck between the press room and the bindery? And just kind of explore some of the things that could happen there. Like, I'd like to kind of think about how, you know, that bottleneck could be those five big problems. So how would we dig down through maybe something that the root cause might be, like a supply issue or a scheduling issue? Or
what, for the example that you've given, Janie, what I would, my personal thought, just thinking of it off the top of my head here, would be to do a value stream map of like what that process is. So if that bottleneck is in, what did you say, between the bindery and the warehouse? Is that?
Between the press room and the bindery.
Press room and the bindery. Okay. So you could do a couple of different things. You could do a process map where you're mapping out all the different processes that go on there and try to figure out which one is, maybe the cycle time is not lining up with somebody else's cycle time and it's creating a kind of a bottleneck there. Or if it's more of a logistic kind of motion transportation thing, you could do some visual direct observation and watch what's happening, and maybe do a spaghetti diagram and kind of map it out like that. Like, you know, this person walks here, and you kind of just draw it out. And then you can kind of visually see where everything sort of clumps together. If you're thinking about it in more of a bottleneck in that regard.
Yeah.
So there are different tactics and there are different tools that can be used for each of those. But most likely, if you've got a bottleneck in a process like that, it's probably something related to a cycle time. So if you've got product coming through your plant and it's going through a very short cycle situation, but the next operation is more of a long cycle, so then this stuff ends up sitting, waiting for this to finish so it can, you know, move on its way. So that's very difficult to line up, because clearly different processes take different time. But there could be ways that you could identify to either plan the jobs differently, so you don't have that, or maybe make some modifications to some equipment to do something different. I don't know. So it just kind of depends. I mean, everything, every process and situation is a little bit different, but.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that whole concept of observation and maybe walking through the job and visually laying your eyes on what's happening to see what might be interfering.
Yep. And it's really good. When you do finally get to like a root cause, or what you think might be a root cause, it's again, depending on the situation, sometimes it's a little harder if you're trying to do something like in a, like an office setting versus on a manufacturing floor. It's a lot easier to see and, you know, see what's going on. But to go out and visually see, like, okay, this is what I think is the root cause. I'm going to stand here. I'm going to observe. If I made this change or took this out, or, you know, whatever the thing is that going to fix, do I think that that's going to fix the problem? And then maybe when you're trying to implement and execute, then you're going to visually observe again and see, okay, did that fix the problem? Okay, it didn't. Okay, I need to go back.
Right.
And that's another thing that people need to be very disciplined about, that they're usually not. It's really hard to be like, really admit that it's something that didn't work and you have to go back. So you may have felt really good about the root cause that you came up with, but at the end of the day, once you've tried to implement it and you know, maybe you've done more research or you're observing the new process, maybe it's like, okay, well, that wasn't it. I really thought it was, but you have to be, again, disciplined to go back and not just be like, yep, I got there, check the box, moving on. Because then, you know, at some point in time, the problem's going to happen again. And maybe you've even created other problems. And we've seen that a lot as we worked through different problems along the way. Like, we might be fixing one problem, but we're uncovering five more that we didn't see because the other covered it up.
Yeah.
So you
That's
kind of,
a great point.
And you have to be willing to see that too, and not just be like, oh no, we'll deal with that, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're and you know, picking up that stone, and there's all kinds of things underneath it.
Well, and Nikki, I loved how you described some of that as you might be uncovering something else, and what you think is an issue isn't it. And I just want to bring us back to the title of what this whole thing is about. It's continuous improvement. It is never ending. And I think we have to give ourselves permission for that to be okay. And that we're always striving to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's never going to be perfect. And it's, even if it was, everything changes. I mean, technology changes, customer requirements change, supply chain changes. I mean,
absolutely.
we're jumping all over ourselves to, you know, onboard new suppliers for raw materials in our plants. And sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. And you got to figure out, you know, what is going to work. And, you know, sometimes that's all you got.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things with the job I'm in now, I deal a lot with, you know, I'm product safety. So I'm dealing with like the chemical pieces of the product and, you know, is it got small parts for a choking hazard and all these different things. And there's a lot of complexity to it. And I really think that if I had not gone into this job with the background that I have with Lean and some of the insights and things that I had, I think I'm not sure that I would have been able to be successful in this job. So really understanding some of the concepts and just being able to apply them to different ways, and not maybe not just to manufacturing, but also to more office settings and things like that. It's a good discipline to have. So if you're somebody who is managing a crew out on the floor, maybe a press crew or something like that, you know, you might also, as you're working through some of this Lean stuff and learning more about it, you might push yourself to maybe look at a process that's less manufacturing based and maybe more just office process kind of based or something, to kind of get that perspective too, because it is quite a bit different when you can't really see the widget moving through the process. Yeah.
I think that's an interesting topic that brings me to a question. So, you know, time is money on the production floor. And sometimes you really have to take that pause. And even if it's just 15 minutes or 30 minutes to take pause and ask the question, and how can we do that in an effective way without stopping the presses, so to speak?
Well, that's always the trick, right? I mean, as much as you can, you know, just try to ask the questions while everything's rolling along. If you can, you know, again, it kind of depends on the situation. If you can kind of, because I remember when I was trying to learn, we were installing some new presses. And so I'd be asking the operator, like, okay, show me how you do this. And so having him just talk me through it while he was doing it was gave a different perspective versus me, like, I could watch and see, but he could be like, well, I'm doing this, and he'd be like, I'm doing this because I have to do this. And, you know, so you'd get a little bit different perspective. So you're doing the observation, you're asking the questions, but you're not necessarily shutting the situation down if you don't have to. It's also good if you can have them, you know, if you're able to do like, hey, show me how to do this and train me how to do this, and so you're kind of trying to, you know, physically do some of the things as well, which definitely brings a different perspective to it, because you might be like, okay, well, you told me to do this, but I have no idea why I'm doing this. Why would it, you know, why would I thread the machine this way or put the ink in over here or whatever? So, I mean, yeah, you don't want to shut production down when you don't have to. Sometimes it just makes the most sense to be able to stop everything. You know, if you've got a situation where you're running a bunch of stuff that you're going to have to throw in the trash. Maybe you've got a technical situation like that. You know, sometimes it makes sense to stop and not be running a bunch of waste and defective product while you're having the conversation or whatever. So it just depends. I know I say that a lot, but it does.
It really does. Okay. I love the example of having someone walk you through the process or train you to do something. I think that can be really wonderful for discovery of a why question or an answer to a why question, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also good because a lot of times, again, sometimes operators don't feel like they're heard. Maybe they feel like nobody really cares what they're doing as long as they get the widget done and out the door and at the right price and, you know, whatever. So just having that interaction and that conversation with them and letting them understand that, you know, you really are trying to help. And at the end of the day, if it can make their lives faster and easier and just less stressful, that, you know, well, most of the time they're willing to chip in and help and give you information, and sometimes they're willing to give you all kinds of information that you maybe didn't even ask for.
Yeah.
But that's all good too.
It really is. I mean, you don't necessarily need a yes answer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You need to. Yep.
Yeah, you don't need the politically correct answer. You need the real answer. And you have to be willing to hear that too and not take offense to it.
Yeah.
So often in my world, when because I've worked, I would say in lean world, I've worked more in like an office or corporate setting versus worked a lot in manufacturing too. But I think a bulk of it's probably been more corporate wide. What we found was that almost always our first answer was, well, we don't have a process that addresses that.
That was going to be my question, is that ultimately, I think a lot of things come down to maybe training, or there isn't an SOP on that, or they just didn't know. And then at that point, that kind of brings up the, okay, so how can we change that now? We have to create that process now.
Because quite honestly, when you're talking about a problem, so if you're going to get to a root cause, you have to have a problem, right? And really to identify and define the problem is the gap between what should be happening and what is happening. And if you don't have a standard, if you don't have any standard work that says this is what is supposed to be happening, I can't gauge what that gap is. So if I don't have, this is what it's supposed to be, here's what it is, then I don't have any problem solving to do, right? I have to understand what this is. So if I, from the very beginning, if I don't have a process to tell me, you know, what my standard is or what the process is, then I need to start there automatically.
Yeah.
And then when I have my gap, then I can figure out, okay, well, why am I performing here, but I need to be here? Then you can start the breakdown and really honing in on that problem. But if you do not have a standard, you can't identify the problem properly.
That's a great point.
Thanks.
Thank you for your time, Nikki. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Print and Packaging Lab podcast powered by PIA Mid-America. Contact us to learn more about membership and for access to this and other content made for the printing and packaging industry. Get in touch by emailing us at info@piamidam.org.